Hello, come inside and meet the missus.
You've just entered the Davis Locker.
Yes, it's episode 7 of our Feel Good film series, and it's a Labyrinth special. Slide into your Goblin King cod pieces. Here's what's coming up.
Wasn't as good as I remember it to be.
Bullshit.
I'll give you the next half an hour. You try and convince me.
I will convince you.
How many furry worms have you seen, other than your own?
Hello, Sarah.
She's a bit of a bellend.
I let you out, you're going to get your ass kicked.
You know I like a little bit of flamboyance.
Because I had your Cadbury codpiece filling my eyeline.
Shoves it in his mouth and then carries on without a care in the world.
A proper ugly little turd. Are you any closer to being around to it being great? Hello and welcome to the Davis Locker. I'm your host, Chris Davis, and with me, as always, he's a lad insane. It's Ziggy Stardust himself. It's only Gazza D. How's it going, pal?
Not too bad, thank you very much. Hey, yeah. I ask for so little. Just fear me, love me, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and I will be your slave. Also, hit that notification bell, because that's really, really handy. Right, Chris, yeah. Let's do this.
Let's do it. As I've said, it's a Labyrinth special. Now, I love the Labyrinth. I would say it's amazing.
Oh, dear.
You haven't that?
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
No, nothing for that one. Anyway, released in 1986, Labyrinth stars Jennifer Connelly and David Bowie. Bowie, what'd you say?
I say Bowie, but I looked it up. It's Bowie. It's definitely Bowie.
It's Bowie. Starring David Bowie as the Goblin King, Labyrinth is directed by Jim Henson and his fall of his magical puppet wizardry. Let's remind ourselves of this cult classic and take a look at the trailer.
TriStar Pictures announces the collaboration of three extraordinary talents. Jim Henson, creator of The Muppets and Dark Crystal.
Where you go with a head like that? Hmm?
George Lucas, creator of the Star Wars saga. The most innovative forces in modern entertainment, David Bowie. Together, they will take you into a dazzling world of fantasy and adventure.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
A world where anything seems possible, and nothing is what it seems.
Everything I've done for you. I move the stars with no one.
Yeah.
Now, now. Run so long, run so far.
The world of Labyrinth.
Wow. I mean, what an incredible film Labyrinth is. It's just absolutely movie magic and probably for me one of the best Sunday films you'll ever watch. As soon as the opening scene kicks out when she's in the park and all that kind of thing, and then it starts to rain and you think, oh man, perfect rainy Sunday film, just sat there watching it at home. It's just, in short, Labyrinth is a great film for me. What do you think, Gar? What?
Do you know what? In preparation for this episode, I obviously went back. I've not seen it for a little while, so I went back and had a look at it. It just wasn't as good as I remember it to be.
Are you kidding me? You're pulling my leg, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I mean, when you think about Labyrinth, there's only a couple of things you think about. First off, the worm, which is really a caterpillar. I don't want to split hairs, but how many furry worms have you seen, other than your own? And also, there's one decent song in it.
God, behave yourself. I mean, from the opening, how can you say, I know which song you're referring to. Obviously, we all know which song you're referring to. But how can you say that from the opening titles? The opening titles are amazing. Kicks off as like some Celtic influences going on, and then some awesome 80s synth work starts to begin. It's just pure 80s.
And also, there's no real plot. That's the thing that gets me. It's just like 90 minutes of bouncing about, random, unrelated set of events, and it's just like,
How can you say that? The screenplay written by Terry Jones of Monty Python fame is absolutely fantastic. It's brilliant. It's humorous. It's funny. It's deep. It's got loads of thematic undertones going on. What are you on about?
Well,
how can you say there's no plot? You've got Sarah, who's like a 16-year-old girl. She wants to be an actress, etc., etc. She's out practicing some lines in the park from the book, The Labyrinth. She realizes, oh my God, look at the time. I've got to get home. I've got to babysit my little brother. She gets there. There's the wicked stepmother vibe going on. Sarah runs upstairs. The baby's crying. He's at her teddy. And she's like, yeah, oh, I'm sick of this baby. I hate him. And then all of a sudden, she starts to look sort of into the ether and say, oh, you know, I wish the Goblin King would come and take you away and all this kind of thing. And we see the little goblins hiding in the cupboard. It's hilarious. The next thing we know, her wishes come true. The Goblin King appears, takes away Toby, her little baby brother, and says, Sarah. That's my boy impression. It's my Goblin King. Sarah, quiet. Sarah. You know, and he gives her 13 hours, basically, with which to navigate this maze, the labyrinth, and rescue her brother before he is turned into a goblin forever. And on the way, she comes across, you know, fantastic characters, incredible set pieces. I mean, it's an amazing film, guy. I can't believe what I'm hearing. In short, pal, bullshit. It's a brilliant
film. Right, okay. Well, I tell you what, I'll give you the next half an hour. You try and convince me that it's better than just okay.
I will convince you, and I can tell you what, I bet there's loads of people screaming down the camera now going, it's a brilliant film. It's a great film, guys. It's not a good film. Labyrinth is a great film, and I will convince you that it is.
I think it's the nostalgia talking, but I'll give you it. Come on then, where do you want to start?
You love a bit of nostalgia. Don't come here with that rubbish. Right, well, we'll start off with, we've already mentioned the Goblin King. We've got to start off with the presence of David Bowie, the great David Bowie. I mean, what can you say about the Goblin King? Like I said then, he appears in the, he comes in through the window and she's like, you're him, aren't you? You're the Goblin King. And you just want him to go, yes, I am. And then like, go point down and go, look at that cob piece. Look at that. You know, I mean, he's incredible. He walks in and it's like the film goes up 1,000 notches for me. You're starving near exhaustion. Everything I've done for you. I move the stars for no one. You've run so long, you've run so far. Your eyes can be so cruel. He's amazing. He comes, he's got his massive hair that I can only describe as kind of either Goblin King-esque or Limahl-esque. There's only the two options, really. There's been nothing else like it. Comes in, he looks resplendent in his gear. His makeup's fantastic. He looks otherworldly anyway, David Bowie. I mean, he is otherworldly. It's David bloody Bowie. You know, he comes in. I mean, there were other people muted to play the Goblin King. We had Sting was Jim Henson, the director's preferred option. We also had one of your favourites, Michael Jackson.
The King of Pop, the best entertainer there has ever been. They should have got MJ. Imagine if MJ was the Goblin King. Come on.
MJ, you're the Goblin King.
King of Goblins? No. King of Pop, maybe. All right? But he ain't the King of Goblins. So the Prince was another option.
Yeah.
Mick Jagger.
Hello, Sarah.
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine Mick Jagger at all being the Goblin King. I mean, you look at Bowie's face, it's like smooth, he looks amazing. Mick Jagger's like a ball bag in a wig. You know what I mean? He looks stupid. Anyway, but those were the options. And I think, obviously, the rest is history. Bowie got cast and he is the Goblin King. There's no two ways about it. No two ways about it. He's incredible. The music's amazing. So, like I said, we've already had the intro and the opening credits, and then a bit of Underground is in there as well from Bowie. Songs like Within You on the staircase scene near the end. By the way, there will be spoilers in this episode. If you haven't seen Labyrinth, what's wrong with you, for one? But if you haven't seen Labyrinth, go and watch it. Turn this off, go and watch it. But the scene where they're on the stairs that are inspired by that M.C. Escher lithograph called Relativity, which was stairs are all over the place. It's amazing. There's three gravities going on. I won't get into the science. It's incredible. The song's called Within You. It's brilliant. When they're in the ballroom scene and it's a world falling down, I think the song's called, or The World Falls Down. Amazing song. I mean, I can't... What are you talking about, Gat?
To be fair, I do like his style. That's what you know. I like a little bit of flamboyance as well.
Yeah.
So I do like his style. What does make me laugh, looking back on it, is when I first watched it as a lad, I didn't realise that he had two different kind of eye colours. I thought that was kind of they had contacts in. But, okay, Bowie, or Bowie, depending on how you want to say it, he's all right. He is all right. I mean, if you want to think about other characters, though, Jennifer Connelly is only of a real human character, and she's a bit of a bellend. Like you say, she's kind of self-absorbed.
I'll give you that.
She calls herself a beautiful princess, and then when she gets into the labyrinth, she like takes Hoggle's precious bag of gems or whatever he's got, and she's like holding his head down, and it's like, oh, and then the knockers, like, she could have knocked on the door, and he's like going, oh, I've had that in my mouth for years and years, but she still shoves it in his mouth and then carries on without a care in the world. I think there's no arc to Sarah, and a week after, she's like going, oh, thank you so much. A week after, not bothered. She's forgotten all about all the people in the labyrinth. She's back to being, oh, do I have to look after Toby again? Yeah.
Right, granted, I'll give you, she is a bit of a brat. She starts off, and like you say, when she's like, once upon a time, a beautiful princess. And I'm like, all right, knob. You know, like, calm down. You won't get your head through the labyrinth, you carry on. But, you know, like, fine, I'll give you that. She is a bit of a knob. But, you know, she does go on. She has got a good arc. She goes on a sort of a, like I say, one of the undertones in the script is she goes on a bit of a journey of sexual discovery. You know, and that's what's so amazing about Bowie. Like, she kind of finds the Goblin King alluring and threatening at the same time. And that's what's so good about him, because that's how we feel about him when we first see him on the screen. He's threatening, yes, but he's also alluring in that, you know, ultra-sexy David Bowie way. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, and now you can say she hasn't got an arc. I mean, she goes from child to a kind of coming of age thing right through the labyrinth, and like I say, that journey of sexual discovery to become the heroine at the end of it all. You know, she outsmarts the Goblin King. She realizes, you know, you have no power over me, and that's a massive statement for womankind, Gat. How can you say that's not an arc?
Because I just don't believe it. I don't believe her that she's going to change. Like I say, a week after, not bothered. She's still moaning about looking after Toby, definitely.
You're whinging like, you know, you remind me of a babe.
What babe?
The babe with the power.
What power?
The power of voodoo.
Hoodoo?
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe. I saw my baby crying hard as babe could cry. What could I do?
A baby's up and gone and left my baby blue. Nobody knew. What kind of magic spell to use?
Fine, I'm nailed.
Oh, Puppy Dog's tears.
But no, you're
and baby sir.
Dance, magic, dance.
Dance, magic, dance.
Dance, magic, dance.
So there you go. As you can see, the music in this film speaks for itself. And thank you to everyone who took part in that little number there. We really, really appreciate your support. So thank you very much. Now, Gaz, we'll leave the music there. Are you feeling convinced yet?
After that rendition, yeah.
Good lad. We're getting somewhere. Right. I'm going to compound this now then. I'm going to keep you going. I'm going to drag you along with me. And I'm going to talk about the imagination and the magic of Jim Henson and his puppetry. Because that's, I mean, at the time, he'd had Dark Crystal come out. He was known for Sesame Street, The Muppets, etc. Dark Crystal had come out. It was successful. Labyrinth wasn't successful at the box office.
No.
It made $12.9 million off a $25 million budget. So it just cleared half its budget. But obviously now, in retrospect, and as the years have gone by, it's become a huge success. And like I said, one of the main parts of that is Henson and his seemingly limitless imagination for me. And what they did with the puppets in this film is absolutely incredible. They moved puppet technology on in terms of radio-controlled puppetry in the faces of Hoggle, etc., etc. Just absolute magic. I mean, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that is one where the way that they've gone about this, like, I love the Jim Henson stuff, especially the Muppets. I love that. But it's kind of the colour that I like that really kind of gets the mind going. You look at it and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But and that's where kind of, again, the technicals is fantastic, but I think the actual design is a bit samey, a little bit very kind of bland, I would say.
What?
Yeah, I mean, Hoggle is very similar to the Wise Man, if you have a look at that. The cards and the door knockers are the same kind of character, really. It just reminds me of, I don't know, a bit beige, really. It reminds me of a tea that I had the other week.
Talking about beige for? I mean, Hoggle is incredible. I mean, it took about six people to control him. He was voiced by Brian Henson, son of Jim Henson.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing feat of technical brilliance in terms of what they did with his puppet. I mean, look at the design of him. For me, when I look at Hoggle, I think he looks like he's been dead for about 1,000 years and his nose and ears have just carried on growing. You know, he's a proper ugly little turd, isn't he? Let's face it. When we first see him, he's having a pee, having a slash in the pool, and pulls his pants up and they start shooting fairies. And right from the off, we know, we see Hoggle and we think, who's this grumpy little git? And that's, to be honest, that's how I feel about you tonight.
Yeah, but normally I'm sat next to a Hoggle. It's been a flip reverse, I think, this week, because nobody you moan, but yeah.
But I mean, Henson's, all of the puppets in this, I think what I love about it is they've got a real kind of touchy-feely vibe to them. You know, it's not CGI. You feel like you can reach out and grab these puppets. They're in the scene. And I think when you have puppets in a film, you get that sort of spontaneous magic that happens on set. You know, if it's CGI, there's a load of artists working on it and every movement is poured over and poured over. Every single frame, every polygon of this creature is poured over. With the puppetry, you get a performance. You get live performance. And I think you can see that in this film, and it kind of seeps through every bit of celluloid for me, that.
Yeah.
You know, every single bit of it, it seems like they're almost alive. Yes, they're puppets, so you know that as you're watching it. But they feel like real-life living characters to me, and that's the magic of Jim Henson.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. I think the technical ability that they put into it, like you say, they've pushed it on. But sometimes, just because it was so difficult to achieve, I mean, we've done some stuff that we've been like, this is unbelievable, the amount of time that we put in just for a small thing. And then at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't even look that good. Let's just sack it off. And I'm not saying this doesn't look good, but just because it's technically difficult to achieve doesn't mean that it's fantastic. It's no Muppets in terms of enjoyable watching. It's no Muppets.
See, I don't know how you could have even said the puppetry and the colours are beige. I mean, they're so lifelike and incredible. You think that for kids, you'd think they would be absolutely terrifying. But when I was a kid, I thought the puppets were just amazing. In fact, the only bit that really kind of scared me in the labyrinth, or the bit I thought was really weird, was the ballroom scene where Sarah eats the peach and then she goes into that kind of, she has that dream sequence with the Goblin King in the ballroom scene, and you got all those people like with the face masks on.
There's such a sad love,
shallow,
deep in your eyes, it kind of paled you. Opened and closed within your eyes, I'll place the sky within your eyes. There's such a fooled heart, beating so fast in search of new dreams. A love that will last within your heart, I'll place the moon within your heart.
It sort of weirded me out a little bit.
Definitely. I know where you're coming from.
Labyrinth, you've got to look at it and just see. I mean, it's a complete world. It's amazing. And all these creatures inhabit this world. And you think about it, the labyrinth, the actual scope of it is quite small. But it may, when you're in it, the labyrinth does feel like it's this massive world. I just think it's amazing. And I tell you what, the map paintings in it are fantastic as well. I've got to give that some.
There's a lot of great stuff on the way that they use different perspectives. I mean, the tile keepers, I love that. And there's something I know you
I love the tile keepers.
You really enjoy as well, yeah.
Exactly. And for the time, the way they sort of stitched it seamlessly together with that, you know, the sort of studio footage of the sort of forced perspective, if you will, kind of thing going on where they've got, they film people here and then they've kind of, you know, composited it on the top of the normal footage. And it just looks amazing. And when she's talking to the worm and he says, no, you can go that way. And she's thinking, well, there's a wall there.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, walk through it or whatever he says, you know, and she walks through and it's seamless.
Well, you ain't looking right. It's full of openings. It's just you ain't seeing them.
Well, where are they?
There's one just across there. It's right in front of you.
No, there isn't.
Come inside and have a nice cup of tea.
But there isn't an opening.
Of course there is. You try walking through it. You'll see what I mean.
What?
Go on then.
That's just wall. There's no way through.
Things are not always what they seem in this place. So you can't take anything for granted.
Hey!
Hey, hang on!
Thank you, that was incredibly helpful.
But don't go that way.
How they did it, you know, for the time, it's absolutely seamless. It's amazing.
Don't you think, though, at some point, you know, he's like, she goes left, doesn't she? He's like, oh, don't go down there. You'll go straight to the castle. I'm like, yeah, well, perhaps you should have just done that. Just get there.
Well, no, because
cut it down for 15 minutes. The film's done and dusted. Fine.
No, I think he helped her there because obviously if she'd have gone that way, if she'd have gone the way and gone straight to the castle, if she'd have gone that way, she'd have gone straight to that castle. If she'd have gone that way, she probably would have just been taken by the Goblin King's army and failed the task entirely. With the help of her friends, she managed to complete the task and save her little brother. So it was right that she went the other way, the assumed wrong way in the beginning. If you think about it, that's the pull part of the journey. And you're whinging about it having no story. You've just asked it to have no story.
Yeah, because I've wasted 85 minutes of my time where 5 minutes could have been done and dusted. But
all right,
what about like the set design then? Because it's just a load of walls. And so they've gone, bloody hell, this looks a bit boring. So that what they've done is put some cobwebs on. Oh, bloody hell, that still looks boring. So they just chucked a load of glitter on it to try and bring it up a little bit.
Come off it, man. All right, there's some scenes where she's running through the labyrinth. I give you that. It does look a bit shiny. It looks like they've had a load of slugs walking on it, don't they, in the morning? She's gone all shiny. I'll give you that. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe it's just the worm and his family.
Maybe, yeah.
Go in the shop, whatever. Going down the park, whatever they're doing. But okay, I'm going to bring you around here. I'm going to mention some characters.
Go on.
Sir Didymus. Yeah. Sir Didymus. Now, how can you look at Sir Didymus and not go, he is amazing. What a brilliant character.
He's all right. The one bit I do like is when Sir Didymus is on his little sheepdog, Ambrosia. And he's just like, it's just obviously the character. They didn't have any radio bits. And he's just like, the dog sprints along. He's like, I do like that bit.
I love him. He's a cunning little fox, isn't he? He loves a scrap. You know, there's massive elements. This goes back to Terry Jones, the writer. There's massive elements in Sir Didymus for me of the Black Knight from the Holy Grail, for example. You know, that 'tis but a scratch kind of mentality. You know, he's up for a rock. He's a tiny little fox. Brave as they come. Remember, he reminds me of my old dog. Remember Scamp?
I do remember Scamp, yeah.
He reminds me of Scamp. Scamp was the same. He was like Sir Didymus. He'd stand by the back door. If there was cats in the gardens, I had an old dog, a little Yorkshire Terrier called Scampy. If there were cats in the back garden, he was like, I smell cats. Now, a little bit of kind of background. He would always lose in a fight to next door's two cats, like every single time. But like Sir Didymus, he'd be like, how about you? Anyway, he'd still want it anyway. And I'd be like, if I let you out, you're only going to get your ass kicked. And he'd still be like, so I'd let him out. A couple of minutes later, he'd come back in, scratch on his nose all the time, licking his wounds, you know, feeling sorry for himself. But brave as they come, like Sir Didymus. What about Ludo? Big old Ludo.
Friend.
Exactly. See, I think you secretly love these guys.
Pointless. He didn't do anything. What does he do? He calls the rocks, and that's about it.
Exactly. And changes the tide of the whole situation. If he didn't call the rocks, the Goblin King's army would have run amok.
There's a little while, there's a nitpick on the bog of eternal stench. Don't get any bog on you, because you'll smell forever. And then the rocks come out of the stench, and they're walking on it. So essentially, they are walking on the bog of eternal stench.
I gave you that. I gave you that one. I'll give you these every now and again. You know, what do you want them to do, though? Put shoe covers on. Ludo would be like, hang on, just before you... Pseudonymus, just stop. Ambrosius, stop there. Before you go on, just slip on some of these industrial blue shoe covers. What do you want him to do?
He's a beast. He's just why can't he just pick up Sarah and just lob her over? Wasn't even that wide.
Jeez. Bog of eternal stench. That's what you must be calling your toilet after that dinner. So I think, I mean, are you any more convinced by the magic of the Labyrinth in terms of incredible direction and vision from Jim Henson? Fantastic performances from all the team involved, all the special effects guys. You know, the characters are so rich, Gar.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I mean, you watch it as a kid, you watch it through your child's eyes, and it's just the best.
There's some things I do have to concede is the owl design. I think that wasn't like the first CG animal or CG kind of thing that's ever been produced.
Yeah, the first attempt at a photorealistic CGI animal in a film. Yeah.
I give you that. I do like the Fieries, like the Chili Gang song, which was kind of the first attempt at kind of green screen, but it wasn't green, was it? They used black screen with I think it was velvet, and then the guys who were in velvet. I think there was four performances for each kind of Fiery member, and they kind of try to cut it out of Nick.
Don't look much.
It's your chili, chili.
They perfectly glow, glow. Ha!
Chili down with fire guns. They small with fire guns. Bang, hey, hot with fire guns.
Like the man said, don't lose your head.
When you think it's wild, chili down with fire guns.
I'm not having a go at the effects because of the time it was really good, but I do look at it and I do smile a little bit because when I first started doing like After Effects and that, there's loads of chatter around Sarah's head. And I was like, that's exactly what I was doing when I first started.
Wow, I can't believe you're mocking it. They didn't even have After Effects then.
Well.
You know what I mean? You're giving it that. So am I bringing you around yet, Gar? Are you convinced yet that Labyrinth is in fact a great film and not just a good film?
Do you know what? I'll give you your dues. You're doing an excellent job. You're getting there. You're getting there.
Well, it must be, because I don't know if you know this, but it's recently been announced that there's going to be a sequel.
There is.
It's going to be a sequel to Labyrinth. Now, it's been met with a lot of apprehension by fans, I would say. A lot of people saying, what's the point? There's no David Bowie. I mean, he is on another level, isn't he? I mean, back to Magic Dance, when he's in one of the bits of Magic Dance, he just breaks the fourth wall. He's that cool. He just looks at the camera, keeps singing, breaks the fourth wall like it's nothing. You know, there's not a lot of people who can do that as a Goblin King. But a lot of people saying, no point. Who's going to be the Goblin King? Is there even a Goblin King? What's the point with that Bowie? What's the story going to be?
Yeah.
You know, people like you, grumbling. Personally,
go on.
For me, sorry to interrupt you, but personally for me, I think a sequel could be brilliant. Because we've seen what they've just done with Dark Crystal, the remake for Netflix. And I thought that was fantastic. They kept it, you know, a mix of the fantastic puppetry and then obviously blended CGI. And it worked really, really well. And if they take that approach, I think this could be a massive hit. Massive hit.
It could be, yeah. I mean, they've got Scott Derrickson, haven't they? Director of Doctor Strange. A lot of people know him for that. Mm. But actually he's got a history of kind of a lot of horror as well. So I think he'll be coming from that kind of background, that genre. I think he should be able to blend it with the fun of Doctor Strange and that thing he did, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. He's done one of the Hellraiser films. Yeah. He did Sinister. So I think he's a good director.
We could have a dark film then. We could have a dark Labyrinth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about, what they're going to do with the plot. I mean, we've kind of had a manga sequel to The Labyrinth, a manga comic release from, so I think it was 2006, 2010, the volumes released from... I think there's four volumes. It's called Return to Labyrinth, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. And it's 15 years later, isn't it? I think Toby, he kind of... The Goblin King's been looking over Toby for a long time. The Goblin's been making sure that he's kept safe and kind of getting a lot of his hats consent. So I don't know if he's going to be a bit of a brat as well, but he kind of seduces him into the labyrinth to take over as the Goblin King, whereas Jareth then gets Sarah to come back in, but he builds a utopia for them. But apparently Toby can't handle Labyrinth, so at the end of it, the Goblin King has to come back and make amends.
That's right. So there's obviously a wealth of material there, I think, you know, that they could draw from. Whether they'll just sort of completely disregard the manga sequel and just kind of go their own route, I don't know. But, you know, the story's quite good.
Mm.
Personally, I think the lead character still needs to be a female. We still need to have a heroine in this one for me. In the sequel, I think it's important that we should have a heroine in the sequel. I don't want it just to be like, oh, Toby's grown up and he's in the labyrinth, you know. So while I like the plot in the manga sequel, I kind of hope they do veer from the obvious.
Yeah.
I want a bit of difference. I want something new, something to just throw us all off. You know what I mean? If you were going to recast the Goblin King, an almost impossible task. Some would say it is impossible. Who are you going to cast?
I think it is an impossible task. That is, when we went to our social media, that's what everyone was saying, was it? I think it was like 95% of people said you can't do it without Bowie. But I just think the way that Michael Sheen can impersonate people, and if you've seen Tron Legacy, his character in that, Caster, is very, very much like a David Bowie type of impersonation, but his Ziggy Stardust stays. I'll try and find a little clip to put it up here.
Of all the innumerable possibilities, he has to walk into mine.
Libations for everybody! I'm Caster, your host, provider of any and all entertainments and diversions. At your service.
He could do an excellent job. Obviously, it's not going to be the same, but he could do a decent job. But I was just thinking, if they do kind of go down this route of Toby being in the labyrinth, essentially he's the main protagonist, the way that people go about putting story together nowadays, you could just say, well, the Goblin King has so much power, he's a female. Make it a female Goblin King. And then you got a whole wealth of people. I was thinking maybe even Lady Gaga.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You really make it great. And the papers want to know whose shirt you wear.
I mean, she's done fantastically well recently with Bradley Cooper. And she's an excellent singer. If they were going to put stuff together, and she has that kind of vibe that could work well with the labyrinth.
Mm. Someone on our social media actually suggested Tilda Swinton, which wasn't a bad shout. Not a bad shout. I mean, Kate Blanchett as well. We had, obviously, she's played, Blanchett's played Bob Dylan in the past, I think. I can't remember the name of the film, but I think almost impossible task, but it kind of remains to be seen what they'll do with it, really, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you guys think? Let us know in the comments if you think there should be a sequel to The Labyrinth, if you think it's an absolutely mental idea, just leave it alone. How you think they might do it? Do you think they should stick to puppetry the traditional way? Do you think we should have some sort of mad CGI version? I know where I stand. Stick with the puppets.
Yeah.
But let us know in the comments. Let us know across our social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter on @TheDavisLocker. So let us know on there. But... I don't know, Gar. I think it'll be a massive success.
I think it will be. If people don't watch it like I did and then go, actually, it wasn't that great. I'm only joking. The nostalgia, I think, will get mums and dads to the cinema. But then there's a lot of... I mean, we've done this, haven't we, where we've loved 80s films and we've got our kids involved in that. So I think yeah, you're right. It has got it.
I think it will be. And I think it will be a hit. I think if the script is good... You know, the thing is, if you're making this film... You've got to be aware of the fan reaction instantly. They know what the fans are saying. So they've either got something up their sleeve that they know this is our trump card, this is going to be great, or they're just disregarding what fans are saying, like Hollywood often does, and going, we've run out of other ideas. Let's just, what haven't we made a sequel of yet? Labyrinth. Yeah, bollocks to it. Let's do it. You know, who cares what the public say? You know, don't do that, Hollywood. Don't do that. There's plenty of young talent out there with original ideas. Give one of them the chance to write the sequel to The Labyrinth.
I'll tell you what, I'll do it for you. I'll do it for you, mate. Labyrinth. Yeah.
Go on.
But I'll do it random. Like, I'll do exactly what Terry Jones probably did. I'll use me backdrop, and here it comes. Are you ready?
He didn't do
this.
Let
me break it down to you.
What? What on earth are you wearing?
What's up? I told you I like the Goblin King style. So, yeah, this is what I'm rocking at the moment. Get over it. Do you know what, though? It's so difficult to get your hands on a codpiece.
Yeah.
Behave yourself, smutty. I looked everywhere, so what I had to do was go into my own cupboards.
Yeah.
I found an old Easter egg that the kids have forgotten about, and that's what I'm using. Half an Easter egg as my cup. So it's chocolate. I feel like it's melting under these lights, so let's crack on. We're going to make a mess. So it's 15 years after Jareth has lured Toby into the labyrinth. How? Because he's kidnapped his sister. She's in the castle at the beyond the Goblin City. So he's like, right, if you want to save your sister, you got 13 hours. Get in the labyrinth, lad. So he's like, right, okay, what am I going to face first? Uh-oh, it's a spider, should we say. Shelob. Yeah, I am stealing from other people because that's exactly what lazy Terry Jones did.
Whoa.
Alice in Wonderland. I'm talking Snow White, Sendak. It's all in there. Right, let's leave that for a minute because Toby, he's battled past the spider, but he's fallen into the Seven Seas of Rhyme. Uh-oh, he's being gobbled up by a great white shark. Don't worry, though, because the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are on hand. They wanted some anchovies on their pizza, so bloop, they reeled in this great white shark. They've seen Toby in there. Heimlich manoeuvre on the shark. Toby's regurgitated. He's fine. He's a bit bedraggled. He's a bit wet, but let's crack on. How is he going to get over the Goblin City? I know, on the back of a dragon. Good lad. Gets over there. Lands in the castle, but he hasn't got the knowledge. He don't know how to get through to the Goblin King. He does if he gets the originals back. So he jumps into a time machine, a DeLorean, straight back to 1986. He gets Didymus. He gets Hoggle. He gets Ludo. So he battles past all the goblins, battles past the Goblin King. He sees his sister. He doesn't have any power over him. And there you go. That's my plot for the sequel. What do you think of that?
Well, I'll be honest, Guy. I found it quite hard to concentrate then. So I didn't really hear what you were saying because I had your Cadbury cod piece filling my eye line, so I don't even know where to begin on that one. But I mean, what I would say is, I think going back to Terry Jones, he wasn't a lazy writer, so where you're getting this from, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things in Labyrinth that people just sort of, I think it bypasses a lot of people. Like I said before, the coming of age thing, you know, she's at this point, she's 16, she's at this point where she's right in the middle of that confusing time between being a kid and being an adult. You know what I mean? And I think that's the labyrinth is sort of is almost like a metaphor for that. You know, it's almost allegorical of that journey. You know, the sort of the clarity of you have no power over me and all that kind of thing. I think that can, that theme is something that people kind of miss out on a lot of the time. But a lot of apprehension from fans, and I can understand that. I think it's fear speaking. People don't want the nostalgic, fantastic memories of this film sullied by a crappy sequel, do they?
No, that's it. But I think so far, I mean, it's gone such an amount of time, and they've also got a lot of time to think about it. So it's not like it happened 2, 3, 4 years after the original, and that sullied it. I think nostalgia does play a big part in these types of films when you look back. But yeah, I think they've got the right people on board. If they're sticking to, like you say, the technical know-how of the puppetry and a little bit of CGI melded together with a good director, I think it's happening, so you can't stop it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for it, I'll be honest. Like I said, the things you just mentioned there, I think will make it a success. I think if they do it like Dark Crystal on Netflix, I think it'll make it a success.
Yeah.
I think it'll be good. What can they really kind of expand upon in the labyrinth? I don't know. What can they give us in terms of a story that's even better than the original or even on a par with the original would be satisfactory, I guess. I don't know. But we'll see. Are you excited about a sequel?
I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to it. Again, it's one of those where I think it's a little bit scary labyrinth, and hopefully I call it like children's horror, where depending on how old your child is, you put it down, it's like flipping heck, this is quite scary. I mean, me and the girls have just been watching Maleficent, and I was like, flipping heck, I think you're going to find this scary, but they found it fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I am looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'd like a darker edge to the labyrinth. I think it'd be good.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great. So we shall see. So, Gaz, I think it's safe to say you're back on board, aren't you, my mate?
You've done a good job, lad.
We can be friends again.
You've done a good
Thank
job.
Thank you, because I didn't want to be... You know, we're still in lockdown, so we can't see each other yet, hence why we do this remotely, but if you just carried on with your crap about Labyrinth not being that good, I'd have banished you from the set.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have you next to me. You're bad. No, you're not coming in. But thankfully, mate, I'm glad you're back on board. So there we go. I think it's pretty safe to say, now Gazzardy's come back on board with his seal of approval, that Labyrinth is, in fact, a great film. If you think it's a great film, please let us know in the comments. Let us know if you don't think it's a great film. You'd be wrong. But let us know if you don't think it's a great film. Let us know across our social media if you think you've got some ideas about recasting The Goblin King. Mm. We are on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter on @TheDavisLocker. Get us all your ideas about The Labyrinth. Tell us everything you think about it, what you love about the film now. Like I said, thank you to everyone who took part in our little song and dance there for Magic Dance. It's one of the best songs in film history. It's got to be said. It's an absolute number, isn't it?
It is good. It is good.
It's a number. Please subscribe to the channel, hit that notification bell icon, and you'll be notified every single time we release any new content. Anything else, Gar?
Or just our lovely little website, Christopher. www.thedavislocker.com, and on there you'll find all the other feel-good film series, videos that we've done, news, reviews, a little bit about me and him if you want to find out that kind of thing. But yeah, it's all on there. It's all on there.
It is, and if you can face not seeing Gaz's Cadbury codpiece in a visual format, you can listen to this on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. You know, listen to it when you're making your dinner, whatever, on the way to work, whatever. You won't see the cob piece, like I said, but it's still an audible treat.
We hope. That's it, yeah. I mean, that wraps everything up. But if you enjoyed that, we got a load of other videos like this one or like that one. Till next time, see ya.